Brothers and sisters, today we are gathered here to talk to you about the river of revenue. We are talking about the prophets, the proverbs of prophets. And ladies and brothers and gentlemen, sisters, I want you to listen to me today. I want you to testify. I want you to take your hands off that keyboard. Take your hands off that iPhone. I want you to take action in your business. I want you to make money. I want you to help people, brothers and sisters. If you do not do this today, you have forsaken yourselves, brothers and sisters.
Hey, podcast listener, you're about to discover insider tips, tricks, and secrets to making more sales and converting more prospects into customers with email marketing. For more information about the Email Marketing Podcast or the Autoresponder Guy, go to dropdeadcopy.com/podcast. Hey everybody, it's John McIntyre here, the Autoresponder Guy, and it's time for episode 17 of the Email Marketing Podcast, where we talk about the top tips, tricks, and secrets for making more sales and growing your revenue and profits with email marketing. Now today, I got a bit of a different episode for you, because my guest today, he refuses to reveal his identity. I'm not going to give you his name. I do know him personally. Some of you will know him as well, but he doesn't want to talk about who he is, okay? He doesn't want anyone to know who the hell he is. So I'm going to refer to him as the Reverend for this episode. Now, if you listen to the entire episode, you're going to discover how to build a cult of you through email marketing. So in many ways, this is about the marketing secrets that religions use to build just ridiculous following. So this is going to draw from religion, from NLP, from various persuasion tactics and strategies. And it's about using some very subtle things and very subtle marketing concepts in the way you write and the way you position yourself, the dynamics you create in your emails. And a lot of these things are very, very simple things that you can do right away to increase your revenue and increase your profits. But many people don't do them because they're a little bit higher level and they can be a little bit hard to execute without concrete examples. So that's what we're going to get into today. Really, really cool stuff. Now, to get the show notes for this episode of the Email Marketing Podcast, go to dropdeadcopy.com/EP17. Now, reviews. If you want to leave a review for this podcast, you can leave a URL and I will read it out on the show, which would be pretty cool. So go to dropdeadcopy.com/podcast, click the review button, tell me what you think about it, and if you have any topic ideas or people you would like me to interview, leave them there and I'll get in touch with them. Then we can find out how they do email marketing. So that's that. Let's go talk to this reverend and find out exactly how to build a cult with email marketing.
It's John McIntyre here, the Autoresponder Guy. I'm here with a very special guest who I've convinced to come and talk about email marketing, but I can't tell you who he is, so it's a bit of a different kind of episode here, but he's only agreed to come on to talk about his most closely guarded secrets about persuasion and influence and how they relate to building a cult of you through email marketing. So this is kind of like ninja stuff, which is going to make things pretty powerful. Some of you are going to know who he is, but he's only agreed to come on if no one reveals his identity. So if you know, you've got to keep your mouth shut. I'm going to call him Reverend for this conversation. How are you going today, Reverend?
I'm good, actually. Better than last time we tried to do this.
Yes. So speaking of that, so the first time we tried to record this, we canned it because it wasn't really up to our standard. We made a few mistakes and we wanted to make it a lot better. So we tried a second time.
We did.
But the audio file was corrupted. So this kind of makes this the secrets that my computer doesn't want you to know.
Yeah, and we're not even joking. That's the best part. This is legitimately. Yeah. We sat here after the recording and I borderline cried after finding all the files were corrupted or empty. And we had like little sound.
I think I actually cried.
You actually cried?
Yeah.
Corner.
After you went home, I curled up in the corner and cried. Anyway, before we get started, give us a quick background on why we should listen to you.
Look. This is the thing. If I have to tell you why you want to listen to me, you'll probably miss out. I can tell by the fact you're listening to the Autoresponder Guy, this email marketing podcast, you're not someone who's worried about the ego side of things. You want actionable stuff that you can use to get really positive results in your business. So what I'm going to say to you is if you want to pay attention, you're going to be able to walk away with techniques for building a cult within your consumers, your potential clients, your potential customers, as well as the ones that already exist. So that's my perspective. So if you're interested, please keep on listening. And if that's not what you want to learn, no worries.
Okay. That makes sense. Well, let's get right into it then. What did you want to share today, Reverend?
Well, look, there's three things I really want to focus on. And these have all been really instrumental for me in building my own businesses, as well as consulting clients who I've worked with. And the first one, which is unfortunately the thing that most people overlook, is the way that you position yourself as not needing your client or your customer. Like, what you have to offer is more important to them than it is to you that they buy it. The only reason it is important to you that they buy it is because it helps them, right? And it's a power play dynamic.
So you're not in this for money. You're just doing it to help them.
Well, yeah, it's a bit like that.
And that's the frame anyway.
That's the majority of the frame. And it also means that you come from a very different position. You're not needy. As we all know, the person who's needy is the person who's failing.
Mm.
There's an old story, which is from a Claude Hopkins book, Claude Hopkins, in where he talks about a client of a copywriter who would actually expose the ugly truth behind why.
Which book is this?
This is from My Life in Advertising, I think.
Great
it
book.
Was. Great book.
Okay.
But he talks about how they had a bunch of Macintoshes, I think it was, that were rotting.
Okay.
And the client was like, oh, you can't say that our Macintoshes are rotting. Very needy, like, I have to preserve my identity, very ego-driven.
Mm.
But the copywriter actually wrote, we have Macintoshes that are rotting. We have this many of them, and we believe that they are still worth this price that we're going to ask for them. So if you want, come in tomorrow and buy them. And the fact is, but by positioning himself as being direct and honest and like, hey, this benefits you more than it benefits me, or hey, I don't need you, like I'm not desperate for you, it meant that people were able to buy into it.
So it's kind of like we might have thrown these out. But, you know, we think they might be worth this price. So come in, and if you want them, you can have them.
Yeah, and the underlying message essentially is, in a power frame, is that there's benefit to you from listening to me.
Mm.
I don't gain benefit by you listening to me. You gain benefit. So it puts the power, essentially, in my hands. So that's, like, the first big thing. And I guess off the back of that is the one team, one dream concept.
That sounds cool.
It rhymes.
It's a little bit of a cliche, right? Like, one team, one dream.
It is.
For some, like, cheesy music to come through the background.
Yeah, flashing lights, 80s suits.
Yeah, man.
The thing is, one team, one dream is another way of expressing the us versus them dynamic.
Oh, I like this one.
But it's a little different, right? So us versus them, you know, indicates a common enemy. Mm. You know, we're on this side of the trenches, they're on that side, we're going to battle, all that kind of crap. You know, that classic thing that you start, you know, this video is going to come down in the next 3 days, and I don't know when, so pay attention to my 35-minute sales pitch where if you close, you lose, and no video playback controls. And let's be fair, they convert. I'm not going to hate on that.
Mm.
But this is a little bit different. One team, one dream is something that you should be pursuing in all of your individual relationships with other people. It's cooperation. It's a fundamental aspect of biology. It's deeply rooted in our human psyche, in our evolution. One team, one dream is the kind of thing where if you're in a relationship with a person, so let's take the partner in your life, your actual personal relationships, if you two are not headed in the same direction, you will not stay together. If you have totally different interests, totally different values, you are not sharing the dream.
Mm.
But if you're on the same page, it doesn't matter if there's a common enemy or not. You guys are bound by that one dream. Makes sense, right?
Mm.
And the big thing here is, and I know we didn't mention this last time we recorded it, was one team, one dream allows you to not need a common enemy. You're actually instead united by a common goal.
Okay.
There's an implicit understanding that anyone who's not following this goal isn't part of us, but it also makes it a much more intimate concept.
Much more uplifting. It's kind of like the transcending the need for an us and them dynamic and just going straight to the, you know, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
Now let's go do something great. It's very inspiring. It's kind of like, it's not just about the product. You know, we're trying to help millions of people do
yes.
X.
Yes.
And there's something, everyone wants to buy into something like that.
Well, let's take a good example, CrossFitters. Okay, CrossFit, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the best modern cults on the planet. People who love CrossFit, they live, eat, breathe CrossFit, they do their WODs, they eat zonal paleo.
They sleep there too, right?
May as well. But the thing is, they're one team, one dream.
Yep.
They're not talking about the medical establishment trying to keep you down and, like, you know, big pharma. They're focusing on, I want to build the best machine that my body can be. I want to be able to get the benefits of positive health in everyday life. So it's one team, one dream. Versus us versus them. So that's really important. First key of having a cult.
Fantastic. Okay. With that, let's get on to the, what's the second key?
Well, I mentioned before cooperation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cooperation, community, one team, one dream, the us. One of the most baseline levels of human interaction and our biology is the way we communicate, right? So the easiest way to distinguish two people as being from the same group or not is the language they use in terms of Chinese versus English.
Yep.
Or might be...
Well, that's the very obvious one, isn't it? Well, Chinese versus English.
It's simple, yeah.
It happens on a much more subtle level, though, doesn't it?
It does. But the fact is, with language and verbals, what you've actually got is the way that you give meanings to things. And it also gives you indication of verbal patterns, right? So what happens is when you and I talk about something, right? So we've just used one team, one dream.
Mm-hmm.
We've just defined a concept in our language.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who's listening to this show, who shares our visions of helping people, improving their businesses by improving the lives of other people, they share that dream, right? We're all on the same team here.
Right.
And we're all going to call it one team, one dream.
Absolutely.
So what's happened in an implicit underlying way that we're not being explicit about is we've actually defined the reality I've given you a set of
glasses. You're doing it right. We're building a cult right now in this episode.
We are. Because I'm sure that everyone who's listening to this would agree that they want to build a profitable business.
Absolutely.
They want to help their clients, their customers, consumers.
Yep.
They want to do it ethically, positively, and they want to leverage email marketing. And as a result, we're all on the same team. This isn't about, you know, people telling you to buy TV ads that are a waste of fucking money. It's about, let's use a really low-friction medium that people use every day to help improve their position in life. One team, one dream.
Yep.
But because we've called it One Team, One Dream, we have now framed that concept.
Right.
So that, you know, when the listener, you know, you, the listener, is at your day job, or if, you know, you're out talking to your friends and family, you will start to see this One Team, One Dream concept live and in action. Whether it's drinking with friends, you know, your party friends, and you go and have a big boozy night, or you get out on the cans, you get fuck-eyed, whatever you want to call it, you phrase that and you create a situation, environment, the name of it, which then determines who is part of the crowd and, as a result, who isn't. So that's a really big part of it. The other side of it, then, in being aware of your language and verbal patterns, is everything you say should be a soundbite.
Yeah.
Everything. So, yep, isn't a soundbite.
But everything you say should be a soundbite
is a soundbite. That's like one of those things that if this was in a post, people would have like that little link next to it.
Click to tweet.
Exactly, right?
Okay.
Everyone feels good sharing it. That's what a soundbite basically is. It's where you get to stand on the shoulders of giants.
A nice little quote.
Make yourself look good.
Mm-hmm.
It's positioning.
Okay.
It's, hey, I'm part of this view. If you can find a way to simplify everything into a soundbite, so it instantly communicates meaning, identifies who and who isn't part of the belief, you're steps ahead of everyone else. Basic soundbite structures is something we'll come to in just a second. But before we do, there's the third thing. Do you remember what the third thing was?
I do remember, and it's definitely not written down on a screen in front of me, so I'm
no.
Gone by memory here. Controlling the frame, number three.
That is correct. And this comes from having already established one team, one dream, having common verbal and language patterns. As a result...
The funny thing is this has already been happening in this entire episode, hasn't
correct.
It?
Correct. It has. And see, by me approving what you've just said, giving validation to it, this is still my frame. Now... To be fair, John and I have known each other for a while, and we've had nights drinking, we've had nights not drinking, we've worked alongside each other, and we've done everything but work. Key part behind that is that John will regularly accuse me of flipping frames on people.
And he does this all the time.
So one of my favorite things is in our local group, in our tribe, our local friendship group, I guess you'd say.
Well, that's that sounds fun. Friendship group.
Friendship group. I can't think of a better a collective.
It's kind
of, it's a bit questionable. But one thing that I introduced and now has come quite far in how often it's used is old John would have done it. You want somebody to do something? Just try telling them that the old version of them would do it. So what you're doing is two things. First of all, you're applying a frame that it's something they would have used, they would have done in the past.
Yep.
They would have done it in the past. And also you're applying the frame that they aren't as cool as the old version of them was. You don't approve of this new version. And that again lays on another frame. So there's three frames kind of stacked. That two-word sentence, in two-word basis of old John would have done it, suddenly change the way people behave. Now, you can try this if you're out on your own. You can go to a bar with a few friends and try and get someone to order a round of shots. Say, hey, John, you're around to get shots. No one's bought shots yet. And John's going to be like, no, man, I'm not getting shots. Get fucked. Old John would have done it. He was a good guy. Not like this new John who's pretty boring, plays it safe.
It works, man. It works.
It's frame setting.
I don't think you've ever bought any rounds of shots, but yeah.
Yeah, but that someone did the other night when I was out there. So can't argue with it. But that's a classic trick. And this all comes down to, again, is when you control the frame, you determine how someone sees the world. So John and I will catch up from time to time. We'll talk non-shop. We'll talk things outside of business. And it will consistently be a game where we're trading frames. Hey, I saw this and this is how I perceive something. Oh, that's kind of cool. I agree with it. Or I approve of that frame, which puts in my frame. But even to the point when you talk about relationships with people, I might say, hey, man, that guy looks like he's trying it really hard. He's dedicated. Where John might flip it and go, I disagree, man. That guy just constantly fails. Two sides of the same coin. The thing is the coin has infinite sides.
Right.
So those are the three things in particular.
You can never escape the frame. This is the thing that really gets me, is that when you're looking at anything, the frame's never not there.
Correct.
It's always there.
Correct.
Even if you think, you know, you're thinking in logical terms, something's right, wrong, or anywhere in between, you think you've got the most true, the most logical, the most reasonable assessment of the situation, it's still just a frame.
Yeah.
And that's really, when you start to think about that, you start to wonder, like, for a little bit, you might go through this stage, it's like, what's really true here? That's kind of irrelevant. What's really going on is that there's a frame, and you got to choose which frame you want to buy into. Are you buying into other people's frames? Are other people buying into yours?
Yeah, it's a perception is reality thing. You know, John and I discussed this couple of hours ago, not even, but about the placebo effect. You know, your perception of what happens actually affects your biology, the way you interact with the world. And the placebo effect is you have a sugar pill and it affects the way you interact with the world. So that's a really important thing to understand, is that your perception is your reality. And there's a quote at the start of the 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. Highly recommended reading, big influence for this episode in particular. But he states basically that whether you want to acknowledge it or not, power games exist. They always will exist, right? So you may as well accept that they exist and then work within their parameters.
Right.
The frame will always exist.
Yep.
So as long as you understand that, and if you're smart enough to jump on board and go, right, this is the frame that exists in this situation, and then either break that frame or replace it with a new one, you're still in the parameters of the game that everybody is playing.
So there's an interesting concept here that I like to pull out, is that it doesn't really matter here. Like, we're not looking at what's good or what's bad, what's right, what's wrong. What you got to really be able to do is step back from moral judgments or moralizing about the situation and think about, you know, what's actually going on and how can you work with it? Because you sitting back and moralizing about what's right, what's wrong in marketing isn't necessarily going to help your marketing. What you really need to do is get rid of that for the time being. You can think about that later.
Yeah.
But really think about, how does the world actually work? How are people behaving? How does persuasion actually work? And then make decisions based off that and filter it through your right and wrong things. But at the end of the day, like, these games are all going on. The framing is always going on. And whether you think this is, you know, manipulative or immoral or, you know, unethical, well, it's totally irrelevant to the extent that it's happening. And whether you like it or not, you're engaging in it.
Yeah.
It's a case of, are you going to control it and make it, you know, work it to your advantage? Or are you just going to let it happen and let people take advantage of it who actually do decide to use it?
Yeah, that's it, man. It's a case of, just because you stick your head in the sand and don't look, that doesn't mean it's not still happening. So it's really important. I think the other thing that we should, right, drive at off the back is, like, this assessment is the realism of the situation. You know, and we are going to bring all this into very specific actionable stuff for your email marketing.
The action plan.
The action plan. But an action plan is useless without the strategy and the philosophy that underpin it. But the fourth thing is the realism, and that is, you are not standing on a podium being an amazing individual who influences the world. You're not Martin Luther King. You're not Tony Robbins. Tony, if you're listening to that, great bloke, but I write your emails like that.
Love you, man.
Yeah, you're all right. No, I'll put my frame on you. But this is the catch. People forget this. And everyone gets emails like this all the time, where they look at it and be like, this isn't written as though one person is speaking to another. Even if it's a clear broadcast, like ASOS sends out these kind of emails. It's a broadcast message. It's a sales HTML newsletter, whatever. But if the languaging is telling me that you're talking to a crowd, it tells me implicitly that you do not give a shit about me. And the same thing happens when you send out your emails. So I actually recently started this new habit when I send out emails. If I'm sending it to a group, I actually type it in a draft in a Facebook window to a friend of mine.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, it mentally frames you, right?
No, right, totally. Like, I tell people, because what we're going to talk about in a minute is some stuff you can, what you're really going to need to do. But I tell them to go into their email inbox and go and look at an email that was sent to their mom, their dad, their, you know, personal friends, anyone who they're going to talk with just like a friend, and look at the language they use. And then just write like that.
That's
correct. But this idea of a Facebook, writing to a Facebook, man, that's genius. That's cool.
It's like setting up your environment for success, right? And we could get into all that kind of conversation. But the key thing is, if you want to write like you're writing to a friend, put yourself in a position where you're writing to a friend. Really, really key takeaway. But that's the reality of it. So keep that in mind, that when you are writing an email, it goes to one person and then a different person and then a different person. Whether you use dynamic variables like names or whatnot, that's up to you.
An interesting thing here, kind of similar to the Facebook thing. If I was to say, I'm going to write an email to this, you know, this weight loss for pregnant women list, and then I was going to go on Facebook and pretend I'm writing it to a friend, so I brought up your profile and started typing out the message here, I might get the messaging a bit wrong because, you know, you're a dude and you're not pregnant. There's kind of like a bit of a mismatch there. So one way to kind of avoid that happening is to do something. We're not going to go too much into detail here, but create what was called a marketing avatar or persona.
Yep.
Give it a picture. Just jump on Google Image Search and type in some random names that sound like they're from the target market, like Linda or Sam or Jason or whatever, and find some sort of random face that you don't really recognize, and put that at the top of your profile, your marketing avatar, which is like three or four paragraphs on who your person is. Like, you know, Jason is 24 years old. He lives in so-and-so. He's been to college.
Do you want me to step this up a notch?
Step it up.
And tweak into this Facebook thing?
Do it.
I have Facebook profiles for avatars. No one knows they exist except me. Yeah. This is like a little secret. No one else knows this except a partner in one of my businesses, right?
Okay.
That's the only other person who knows this. I think I have like four or five, and I use that. They've got no friends except me.
Yep.
They are not connected to anything that I am connected to, with the exception of that friendship, and maybe some overlap in interests or whatnot. Okay. Because Facebook is the modern day
avatar. So you've set up their profile as though they're an actual person.
The movies they like, pictures. The music they like, wow. What they do, their hair image. I love that.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really useful though.
Okay.
But one of them I used maybe...
That's a cool little secret, right?
It was like 5 years ago I used one of them, maybe six now.
Okay.
And I actually kept an email address from back then that I set up when I signed up for a bunch of shit that I didn't care about.
Mm.
But that person became a persona in my life.
Yeah.
Like one that I could write to. But as a result, because I was signing up to all this other stuff... They actually are a very full-blown persona. They have music interests. They have video interests. They are so detailed. And that's what gave me the idea. If you use them, you will grow a persona. And it means that when you open that chat window, they're never going to be online and see you typing to them because they're not a real person.
Hmm.
But you're still thinking, hey, I'm writing to Brendan or Simon or Catherine. You're typing to one person.
Yep.
And anyone who knows who I am, don't bother going through my friends looking for these people because there's too many of them with the same name. That was very intentional. I have to go delete them all now. So that's a really key thing. Now, I guess what's important for you and for me is that we turn this into really actionable email marketing-based stuff.
Yeah, what can you do about it, you know?
Well, how can we use this stuff in the real world, right? Well, we're going to have to go hard and fast. We've got about 7 minutes before we wrap this up, right?
Yep.
First thing you want to do is focus on the fact that you don't need someone, right? You want to focus on that positioning and make sure that is the underlying idea, the underlying mindset of all your communication, right? Are you confident with the product you've got?
Mm.
The easiest way to improve your marketing is to build a better product. If your product is shit, if what you're trying to sell is shit, get out or improve it. Because no matter what you do, you will be faking it until it's on top. Okay? So that's really a key takeaway. The mindset of your communication has to be confident with you in a position of power where you're improving their life to their benefit and your benefit is secondary, not the other way around. It will unintentionally seep through what you do. The second thing is language patterns, right? Which is setting the tone. Are you being fancy or are you being authentic? Are you being direct or are you being like a big, look at me, I am a business. I have big fancy words. I am a corporate. I will not put my name on this for some dumb, embarrassing word.
They were pretty simple words.
They weren't $5 enough. Whatever. But the fact remains that if you're ever concerned about putting your name on the bottom of an email,
you shouldn't be sending
it. No, you shouldn't be sending it. Like, there is an unresolved issue in your own head. Like, I'm not a psychologist, right? But I'll solve your problems. And right now I'm telling you, if you don't put your name on the bottom of an email you send, you're either embarrassed about it or you're embarrassed about the product you're flogging.
Right.
That's it. That's like the main reason people will refuse to put it. It's not because you're scared that someone will write you an angry email. Like, that might come, but you're actually more scared that someone will see through the illusion you're trying to create, see your product is shit, and then send you an angry email because you're faking it.
Mm.
So think about that. That goes back to...
key thing here is understanding who you're writing to. Like, if you're writing to, like, these, you know, weight loss for pregnant moms, that's a very particular market. And, you know, you'd want to be, like, writing from a pregnant mom perspective, female language, all that kind of stuff. If you're writing to, you know, 25-year-olds who want to get ripped and take steroids and get jacked, it's going to be different language again. And if it's B2B marketing, where you're writing to business people or even people who, you know, I've done autoresponders for clients where the emails are going to, say, not the head of a company, but say, you know, someone in the marketing department. So what happens is the language and the benefits all have to be addressed in context with the person they're going to, which means that I can't write about, you know, making more money or anything like that because that's not the main concern of this person in the marketing department. Yes. They just want their boss's approval.
They want their boss to be happy with the amount of money they've just made as opposed to them personally.
Yeah, so you got to really keep in mind of what do people really want and then cater the email to that exact thing.
Yeah. As a quick aside, before I give you three actionable tips on that, one thing that's really important is to understand the dynamic in which you're writing. Like, are you the expert because you went and did all the research and you've compiled it into an easy-to-follow guide for them? Are you the expert because you created the product from scratch and you innovated and designed and reworked? Are you the expert because you've been in that situation and you've overcome it? That's why you're the authority. Like, be very aware of that because that's like another hidden tonality point that most people miss. Why are you the authority in their eyes? So if you're a pregnant, pregnant woman weight loss?
Yeah.
If you've got a pregnant woman weight loss blog.
Post-pregnancy weight loss.
Post-pregnancy, okay. Post-pregnancy. Now, as a guy, I could write that from the Reverend, right? Now, the Reverend writing, that might seem a bit off. But what if I said, hey, my name's the Reverend, and I actually run this pregnancy weight loss blog because my wife had a child, and she struggled with weight loss for a little bit afterwards. So I went and researched the best ways to do it, and I found that there are five things in common for absolutely everyone who wanted to lose weight after pregnancy to use. That's one way. The other way would be me retaining myself as the reverend is, hi, I'm a doctor who, I'm obviously not, but I'm a doctor who works with women who work on losing weight after pregnancy.
Right.
That's my job. That's how I finish things. So really be aware of why you're the authority.
So we've got three actionable points.
Yeah.
What are they?
All right. Easiest way to get better at writing emails. Short, sharp sentences. Get rid of all of your commas. If you have a comma, it's a new sentence. Secondly, write like you talk. Okay, that's a really important one. Do not try and start inserting $5 words and being fancy and not being yourself. Write like
you talk.
What's
a $5 word?
A $5 word is, I think it's an idea I stole from Stephen King. Don't use a $5 word when a 50 cent one will do. Something like that.
Right.
So a $5 word is...
like encyclopedia.
Is not a $5 word because it's very clear what it is.
Well, you could just say book.
You could, but an encyclopedia is not a book. A $5 word is, we here at John and Reverend Co., believe in synchronicity of values, ideals, and compassionate outcomes.
Bullshit.
Shit that doesn't mean anything, right? So that's essentially what I mean. When I say don't use a $5 word, I'm saying be clear, be direct. You should be able to reread your copy and it should be unmistakable what you're saying.
There's a great article I read just the other day that is by George Orwell on writing.
No, it's by Chuck Palahniuk, the guy who wrote Fight Club. He's talking about getting rid of the thoughts.
No, there's a few different types. Stephen King's got another one called On Writing. They all have kind of similar rules. But George Orwell talks about this. We'll have a link down in the show notes about this exact point about how you get people coming out and saying synchronicity and just saying all this stuff without really saying anything at all.
Yeah.
And the real point is that you should just say whatever you need to say. Stop farting around.
Yeah.
And just get to the point.
Lower your fog index. It's the easiest way. Yeah. If you guys haven't used the fog index tool, it's in Microsoft Word. You can get it online. But it basically shows you the level of reading that your writing is equal to. So if you're writing to a university paper level, or
you write a grade 4 to grade 6.
Keep it simple, man.
Generally.
Unless
you're writing to PhD scientists or something.
Even then, keep it simple. Just a quick note, we'll also put in a link in the show notes to Chuck Palahniuk. I've probably written better, spoken his name wrong. Fight Club. He actually wrote a series of notes about how you should tell a story. Right. And you should get rid of thought verbs. Somebody never thunk something. They were sitting there wondering. You imply specifically what they thought. Implicitly say what they're
doing. That's interesting. Okay. So, we'll link down in the show notes. Cool.
Yeah, for sure. And the third thing to cover back, actually, first of all, staccato, short, sharp, simple sentences. No commas or full stops. Write like you talk. Be clear. No $5 words. And finally, give a name to anything you possibly can. Now, we happen to know, John and I have a lot of common friends who work online and have their own followings, their own communities. And the consistent thing amongst all of them is that they name things. They give a name to common everyday concepts and make it sound special, make it sound magic. And they create ownership over someone's life or ownership over someone's domain.
Right.
Now, I'm sure you can think of a couple off the top of your head. Don't have to say them.
We're trying to reveal the magic.
Well, that's it. We're trying to give who the Reverend is private and also who our shared connections are private.
Right.
But if any of those people that we know these shows, they'll be able to pick it.
Yeah.
So a real key thing here is if you can give a name to something, if you can define it, this puts you in the one team, one dream territory.
Define someone's reality.
That's it. You actually show that you understand it better than them. Mm. This is a key in selling. If you can define somebody's problem better than they can themselves, they instantly will see you as an authority, give you due credit, and believe whatever you say.
Right.
And your best bet is to do that by naming it. It's no longer a sharp pain in the wrist. It's an acute pain running down the right-hand side of the left wrist that only really pops up when you move your thumb. And I call that thumb-triggered inner wrist pain. Perfect example of it, right? So I've just given you...
I was waiting for that punchline, man. What's that, thumb-triggered inner wrist pain?
Thumb-triggered inner wrist pain.
Oh, I've got some thumb-triggered inner wrist pain, and you're the only guy...
I'm the thumb-triggered inner wrist pain guy.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Isn't that crazy?
That's it, the reverend. The wrist.
Why is it that no one else deals with thumb-triggered inner wrist pain?
I'm sure there is. There will be. But they don't call it.
They don't call it inner wrist pain. Right. So if anyone comes up and they're like, well, what's my problem? It's thumb-triggered wrist pain. All of a sudden, they can't go to anyone else to solve their problem because you're the only one who does it.
That's correct. And you'll also notice the name I've given it is something that A, instantly communicates what it is, B, impossible to misunderstand. Thumb-triggered inner wrist pain.
Okay.
Pretty hard to misunderstand. And also, you don't need to be a special person to get it.
Right.
So if you were explaining this to someone or someone was actually coming up to you and was like, man, you know, just here on my left wrist, just in the right-hand side of it, gets really sore whenever I move my thumb, what are you going to call it then? After you've heard me refer to it as thumb-triggered inner wrist pain, you'll call it thumb-triggered inner wrist pain.
Right.
And because you're using my language, you are now in my cult. Simple as that. And finally, yeah, it leads us to the last thing. If you're in my cult, I'm controlling the frame. If you're building your own cult, you're controlling the frame. It's how people end up drinking poison while thinking a comet's going overhead while wearing a tracksuit.
Has anyone ever done that?
Well, they haven't lived to tell the tale. I think that's the point.
Ah.
You haven't heard the story?
I've never heard that story.
I can't remember the name of the cult, but basically when I think it was Halley's Comet was going overhead, it's called Heaven's Gate was the name of the cult, and they dressed up in tracksuits and drank spiked punch and killed themselves, thinking that their souls would go up, and actually it was like the second coming of God or something, and that would take them to the next life.
Maybe it worked because they're not here anymore.
Well, debatable. Just going to put that out there. Yeah, that's the third thing is, but that's it. If you control the frame, that's the power you have. And if you put all the other pieces in place like we've discussed, if you assess your mindset and you come from a position of power, if you offer value to other people's lives, you become someone who brings positive news, positive value. You are on the profit center side of the balance sheet as opposed to the expense side of the balance sheet. You're in the power play. If you're easy to understand, you can inspire people to action. If you can put names on things that they experience in everyday life, if you can frame their world, well, you control the frame they see the world in, and you've got a cult. That's the basics.
Fantastic.
Go create a cult.
Okay, let's do it. Well, we got to get going. We got a bit of poker to play over here. It's raining outside. I'm looking forward to some poker.
John's got to lose some money.
Going to do my best. We'll see how we go, right? I think this coffee will help. But anyway, before we go, Mr. Reverend, the Reverend has a very special voice and he loves doing sermons. And I've convinced him to say goodbye with the Reverend voice. So before we go, give us a quick line from the Reverend.
Brothers and sisters, today we are gathered here to talk to you about the river of revenue. We are talking about the prophets, the philosophy of prophets, the proverbs of prophets. And ladies and brothers and gentlemen, sister, I want you to listen to me today. I want you to testify. I want you to take your hands off that keyboard. Take your hands off that iPhone. I want you to take action in your business. I want you to make money. I want you to help people, brothers and sisters. If you do not do this today, you are forsaking yourselves, brothers and sisters.
All right, I think that's a good note to finish on. Thank you for coming on the show, Mr. Reverend.
Absolute pleasure. Go create a cult.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you want to discover more insider tips, tricks, and secrets about driving sales with email marketing, sign up for daily email tips from the Autoresponder Guy. Go to dropdeadcopy.com/podcast. Sign up, confirm your email address, and I'll send you daily emails on how to improve your email marketing and make more sales via email. You'll find out why open rates don't matter and the 7-letter word that underlies all effective marketing and much more.